Now, having said so much by way of preface to the whole series, let us come on now to this evening's subject, the analytical psychology of the Abhidharma. Now, despite the use of this expression, analytical psychology, I'm afraid there's no connection here with Jung. For some of you that may be a disappointment, but we hope that in the course of the lecture there may be compensations. And in any case, we shall have something to say about Jung later on in this series, in at least one or two of the other lectures. Now, the first question which suggests itself to us, the first question we have to answer is, what is the Abhidharma? I'm quite sure that to most of you this term is completely foreign. Unless you've made a quite serious study of Buddhism, you will not have come across it. So what is the Abhidharma? This is the first thing that we have to understand. Historically, we may say that the Abhidharma represents one of the most important developments in the whole field of Buddhism. It's very widely, intensively studied in many parts of the East today, though I'm afraid that in some Buddhist circles in the East, a great mystery is made out of the Abhidharma. In some Buddhist circles in the East, when you mention the word Abhidharma, they hold their breath, as it were. They think at once of something very mysterious, something very profound, something which only the monks know anything about. And very often the impression is heightened by the fact that the books, the texts of the Abhidharma, are written in gold on beautiful palm leaf manuscripts, and sometimes bound in golden covers, and sometimes the covers are studded with jewels. And in this way people get the impression, heightened by their devotional feelings, that the Abhidharma is something very aloof and mysterious, which ordinary people can't touch, which they can't even think about. But this mystery is really quite unnecessary. In principle, the Abhidharma is, I won't say simple, but certainly straightforward. Now, as to the meaning of the word Abhidharma, the second part, or the second half of the word, dharma, here means the doctrine or the teaching. That is to say, the doctrine or the teaching of the Buddha. And abhi is a prefix meaning higher, superior, or further. So the Abhidharma is the higher doctrine or the further teaching. This is the first thing that we have to understand, the literal meaning of the word. The higher doctrine or the further teaching. Now, what precisely does this mean? To understand this, we have to go back to the origins of Buddhism. We have to go back to the life, back to the teaching of the Buddha himself. The Buddha, as I reminded you at the beginning, lived about 500 BC. He taught very extensively, but like Christ, like Muhammad, he wrote himself nothing. He taught orally. He walked from place to place. He met people, met lay people, met monks, princes, wealthy Brahmins, peasants, beggars, scavengers, courtesans, met them, talked to them, taught them. So this process, this ministry of his, went on for 45 years. And in the course of those 45 years of ministry, he must have delivered, he must have held thousands, even tens of thousands of discourses and dialogues, conversations, answers to questions, and so on. And around him, there was usually a circle of disciples. Always there were with him a few devoted followers at least, and they, as best they could, learned by heart whatever he said. The words which fell from his lips, they treasured up, they reflected upon them, they repeated them one to another. In this way, they committed to memory whatever he had taught them, or as much, at least, of it as they could remember. And when they were old, they transmitted what they had learned, what they had remembered, to their disciples, convey to their disciples in turn, and in this way the teaching was preserved for posterity. This process, incidentally, of oral transmission went on for several hundred years, at least for 400 years. Now, what happened was that after the Buddha's death, there was an enormous amount of material in existence. He had hundreds, thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of monk disciples. They used to gather together regularly at intervals. They used to recite congregationally what they remembered of his teaching, trying to reduce it to certain standard forms. So in this way, there was an enormous floating mass of material in existence, handed down. But the important point, the point with which we're concerned, is the point that it was not systematically arranged. They remember that on a certain occasion the Buddha had spoken in such and such a way to a certain Brahmin who asked a question. Or they remember that on a certain occasion he'd called the monks together and given a discourse on a certain topic. So they remembered all this. This discourse, that dialogue, that conversation. They remembered it all, repeated it, handed it on, transmitted it. But it was not systematically arranged. It was all mixed up. Long discourses mixed up with short ones, poetry mixed up with prose, teachings about the mind mixed up with teachings about the elements, teachings about cosmology mixed up with history and legend and marvels and biography. So it was all mixed up after the Buddha's death. But within a very few years, within a few decades, certainly within centuries, the monks gradually started sorting it all out. Some of the more brilliant, more retentive minds started studying the whole mass of the tradition, started organizing it systematically, and in this way it was all worked over by many hundreds of monks over a period of several hundred years. And the result of this sorting out process was what we call the Abhidharma, the higher teaching or the further doctrine.